From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. After years of decline, homelessness in the United States edged up in 2018 for the second year in a row. That's according to a HUD report out today. By the city of Atlanta's last count, the number of homeless is declining. The number of veterans, families sleeping on the streets rather than in shelters is up, however, and so is the number of young people. And we're learning about that last population with Eric Wright. He's professor and chair of sociology at Georgia State University. As a medical sociologist, he's talked to hundreds of homeless youth over the past few years and joins us in the studio. Eric, welcome.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. Also with us, Tammy Joyner. She's a reporter for the Center for Sustainable Journalism, and that's based at Kennesaw State University. She has been reporting on youth homelessness around the Southeast, often in more rural areas, for the center's new series on the intersection of homelessness and juvenile justice. Tammy Joyner, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Eric, can you give us a snapshot of youth homelessness in the country overall and in Atlanta?
Well, I think youth homelessness is a particularly interesting social problem because it really is an invisible problem. I think one of the most curious things when we did a study in 2015, we identified we estimated there were about 3,300 homeless youth in the metro Atlanta area. The state of Georgia estimated for that same period that there were 725 youth under the age of 25 for the entire state of Georgia. And I think part of that is because youth tend to fall under the radar of traditional methods for counting homeless. And I think one has to be a little more aggressive when one reaches out to those populations.
How is youth homelessness defined? Is it under 25?
It's basically youth who are unaccompanied youth. Actually, the number of youth who are homeless is actually much larger because when you include youth who are attached to families and going into shelters with families. So we're really talking about the unaccompanied youth population under the age of 25.
Now, Tammy, you've been around the region reporting on youth homelessness and juvenile justice. What's the connection there?
I've picked up on a lot of what Eric is saying. We started our project in North Carolina, specifically Asheville and Charlotte. Asheville, Buncombe area had the highest rate of homelessness, Charlotte, Mecklenburg had the highest numbers. And what we found were quite a few young people, while the youngest of them, 12 and up to the age of 17, 18, tended to be in centers or programs. The ones who had aged out of foster care or juvenile systems were out on the streets. And we found, quite a few of them that were staying with either families or friends in something that's known as couch surfing, or living in cars or on the streets in parks and things like that. But as Eric was saying, they're very invisible. They want to blend in. When I talked with Eric earlier, that's something that makes them distinguished from the chronic homelessness is that they tend to blend in. They're very mobile. They live by their cell phones and backpacks and so forth.
So moving from place to place often.
Right.
And does that mean city to city or town to town?
Pretty much, yeah. If they get anchored in a place, they'll stay there. I found some folks in Charlotte who had moved from other places and come in. If they find a good resource program, they'll tend to stay there and try to make their way out.
Eric, you were nodding. The connection between juvenile justice and homelessness, is it that they run afoul of the law if these kids are unaccompanied?
I think it's a much, very, very complicated problem. There is that element of that, but there's also a lot. In fact, one of my most striking statistics in our 2015 study was that about half of the youth watched a parent or a loved one go off to jail. So not only are they involved in the criminal justice system themselves, but they're also sort of are indirect victims of the criminal justice system. And so I think that we forget sometimes about how those things create instabilities in family systems.
Well, there was a series on this last week for NPR in Los Angeles. And this is a young couple. They became homeless when they got married without their parents' approval. Here is one of the youth. His name is Brian Lopez.
My mom agreed to it, but my dad didn't, so I just got kicked out of the house. I didn't really think he was going to do that to me, so he just kicked us out, and I was like, fine, I'll just take the car. And we ended up going to Santa Monica, so we started living there for like a cool 3 months.
Just showering at the public showers near the beach, going to Starbucks to charge their phones and get water.
That was that last voice reporter, Anna Scott, from member station KCRW. Eric, what are some of the reasons, speaking with youth here in Atlanta, about how people find themselves homeless?
Well, I think Brian's story is actually pretty indicative of what's going on here in Atlanta as well. I mean, most of the youth we talked to talked about job problems, and financial problems just generally, but also housing problems. And I think Brian's story is indicative of what I think is the larger thing we're not talking about, which is the difficulties youth have in making the transition to adulthood. And here in Atlanta, where we're seeing housing prices skyrocket, it's really hard for a young person who may want to leave, or in some cases like Brian, or a lot of LGBTQ youth, in fact, get kicked out of their home, find themselves on the street, but then they don't have any resources to be able to make that transition to adulthood very smoothly.
Have you found the numbers of LGBTQ youth rising? Is it more acute in that population?
Well, we are doing our second study this fall, and I don't have those data yet, but I can probably answer that question next spring. We found about 28% of the youth that we talked to in 2015 were LGBTQ, which is about where we would have expected given other studies that have been done.
Tammy, is that what you found in your studies?
Yes. We ran into a couple of transgender youth who were out on the street, and we did run into that situation where they had been they'd left home because they didn't have any support from their families. But I want to piggyback on what something Eric had said, that housing is really, really a problem. And I think Eric turned me on to something about the fact that the homeless situation in this country has changed dramatically after the 2008 housing crash. Mm. A lot of people lost their homes. Those families, you found more families out on the street. And consequently, you found families with children. And something that I found that was very, very disturbing to me as a mother of two sons is that many of the families had to make very tough decisions about putting their young son out on the street because many of the programs, and I found that what Eric said and other experts, is that a lot of the programs that help families and homeless tend to view adolescent boys as predators in training, mm-hmm. in a sense, and so they're
considered high risk.
Yeah, so they don't allow them to come into the shelters, and so those young boys will go out, so that their mother and sisters perhaps can go, and then the father and the son may go stay in the car, or the young boy will just stay out on the street or try to bunk with some friends.
Right. While homelessness overall is declining, the percentage of young people living on the streets of Atlanta is going up, and many are unaccompanied youth, and we're learning more about them from Georgia State University sociologist Eric Wright, who studies youth homelessness, and Tammy Joyner reports on the national phenomenon for the Center for Sustainable Journalism at Kennesaw State University. Well, Eric, what are we seeing for services? Are there programs that, especially in a big city, you're much more likely to have those social support services? Any in particular addressing those problems for LGBTQ youth?
Well, I think there are a number of agencies across the city, which is a handful of agencies that are trying to address the problem. Lost and Found Youth was founded several years ago to focus on the LGBTQ youth problem or issue. And I think many of the other agencies that are trying to serve the youth population have found also that they have to try and engage that population specifically. But I think the whole general situation is that we're really under-resourced when it comes to youth homelessness. I think the youth who tend to access services in more traditional locations end up encountering a lot of violence and a lot of being just simply uncomfortable in sort of the more adult-oriented service systems. They don't usually fit very well with the group that Tammy was talking about, of the chronically adult homeless population. And so I think there's a growing need for sort of dedicated services.
How about the trajectory for a youth who is homeless? Do we have enough data on how they go through the rest of life? You know, do they remain chronically homeless? Can they get on their feet?
It's really hard to know because I think actually no one's ever done a really longitudinal study of the impact of homelessness. In fact, some of my colleagues at Georgia State have been talking about doing just that study because of our ability to sort of access the population, and we sort of see the precursors of what will be a difficult life. There's a lot of research now that focuses on the early childhood traumas. And one of the things that we assessed in the 2015 study and this fall study was the degree to which they experience these and high levels of trauma in these young people's background, which doesn't necessarily speak very well for their future. Because the more traumas you have, the longer, more difficulties you have over the course of the life. One thing that did stand out that was kind of unusual was the degree to which the young people exhibited what psychologists call resilience. They tended to be very optimistic about the future and have a lot of what we think of as psychological skills that people who've experienced tough stuff exhibit when they learn from that tough stuff. It really was remarkable when we talk to the young people and they talk about these terrible things happening, but they still have hope for the future. And I think if the service system would figure out how to capture that hope better and work with them in that way, I think then there's a greater chance that we could get them on a good footing for their adulthood.
Well, that's optimistic to think of. Tammy, how about for rural youth? Are there as many services out there?
No, there are not very many services, nowhere near what you may find in the big city. A report just came out recently by Chapin Hall out of University of Chicago, which is an extension of a broader study they did last year. And it found that rural homelessness, the kids there faced the same things that many of the young people in the cities faced, but they didn't have any resources. Matter of fact, a young man we ran into in Asheville was from North Georgia, from the North Georgia Mountains, and his family had sent him to Asheville to get some services, to go to rehab, actually more like a rehab for a drug addiction that he had. He went there for 3 months, and after he finished his program, one of the employees out of the rehab home drove him to Asheville, opened the door, and said, good luck. He pretty much was back at square one. And living in Asheville, when we found him, he was in a park.
And is that what happens? Many people are sort of living in parks, going to Starbucks, as we heard, or coffee shops and washing up. So pretty resourceful, as you said.
Absolutely.
The resilience.
One thing Tammy sort of mentioned, this the young person, issues of substance abuse and mental illness are very prominent in this population. And one of the things we did observe was that the ability to serve youth, which we estimated about 2/3 of the youth had a substance abuse problem of clinical nature, as well as about 1/3 had a mental health problem. To provide those services has got to come along with housing. You can't do one without the other.
There has to be a wraparound services.
And we've tended to focus on the housing part. We haven't just focused as good on the sort of wraparound services.
Well, that's much more complicated, as
Absolutely.
You know, and much
costly.
More expensive. Exactly.
Yes.
And so do you think that, especially, we've had a homelessness problem in many cities all across the country and increasingly in rural places, but is there the sort of political will to make that happen?
I think it's hard to gauge the political will. I think I've certainly talked to a lot of legislatures, I'm sure Tammy has as well, that they speak, they talk the talk, they want to do something, and everybody they do, especially unaccompanied youth, they tug at our heartstrings. But I think the problem is that how to serve them, the models for that, how much it's going to cost, those are big questions that it's really difficult to answer, and I'm not sure the political will is sort of coalesced there. Around that.
Eric Wright from Georgia State University, sociology professor, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
And Tammy Joyner, she's a reporter for the Center for Sustainable Journalism at Kennesaw State University. She's working on a series in Youth Today where you can find more of her reporting. Thank you so much, Tammy.
Thank you so much.
For a link to the Center for Sustainable Journalism series, you can go to gppnews.org. And just ahead, a Macon artist aims to fill in the gaps of Black history. But first, the theater at your fingertips. Stay with us for a conversation with the directors of Atlanta's first text message play when On Second Thought continues.